Рубль положили на лопатки.
Рубль продолжает падение.
Официальный курс американского...
Курс доллара достиг рекордной отметки 30...
What would happen if Russia's current political turmoil was compounded by an economic crisis? We may find out soon enough. The price of energy, which accounts for roughly half of Russia's budget revenues, is falling, as is the ruble, which hit a three-year low this week. Contagion from the euro crisis, meanwhile, risks raising the cost of capital, putting an additional squeeze on the Russian economy. In a widely discussed report released last week, the Center for Strategic Research, a Moscow-based think tank that correctly predicted the wave of protests that swept Russia this winter, concluded that maintaining political stability, let alone a return to the pre-crisis status quo, is no longer possible. The report noted that the middle class in the largest cities is de facto lost to the authorities, and an economic downturn would undoubtedly cause them to lose the working class as well, leading to potentially to rural and industrial unrest. Meanwhile, former Finance Minister Alexei Kudrin, whose newly formed Committee of Civic Initiatives commissioned the report, said there was a 50% chance that the Russian economy could slip into a recession. Economic turbulence, political uncertainty, and an increasingly nervous Russian elite. Hello and welcome to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service, who is just back from a trip to Moscow and his native Nizhny Novgorod. Welcome back to the podcast, Kirill, and a big thanks to New York University's Mark Galliotti for filling in last week. I hope you have some interesting observations to share with our listeners today, Kirill.
Thanks. I'm happy to be back here in the podcast, Prague, and so on.
Well, an economic downturn in Russia could land what I would call the second half of a 1-2 punch against Vladimir Putin and President Vladimir Putin and his ruling circle. As I've written about in the blog in the past, and as we've discussed, Kirill, many times in the podcast in the past, rising living standards in Russia over the past decade have led to the creation of an embryonic middle class. This middle class once made up the bedrock of Vladimir Putin's support, but once this class became secure in its wealth, as was the case in South Korea, Indonesia, Taiwan, and elsewhere, it began to seek political freedoms, causing it to lose patience with Putin's authoritarian rule. Having lost the middle class, which has taken to the streets against him, Putin turned to the working class, which is now the backbone of the Kremlin's social base. But a deep recession risks turning them against him as well. Kirill, you just got back from Russia, and I'd like to start with your observations from Moscow and Nizhny Novgorod. Did you see any evidence that Putin's support is waning among ordinary Russians? And do you see evidence that the economy is in trouble?
Well, first of all, of course, my observations are not strictly scientific because I didn't launch any, opinion poll project about the...
Of course not, but you were out there.
Just some conversation with so-called ordinary people in Moscow and Nizhny Novgorod. Not ordinary in the strict meaning of this word. There are a lot of various people, those who are running small business or some representatives of intelligentsia, Russian intelligentsia, and intellectuals and creative class, and so on.
These people that once supported Putin strongly in the past?
Various. First of all, I had some conversation with people in the Nizhny Novgorod who are not terribly interested in politics and in previous times, and usually they voted for Putin and United Russia Political Party. When I asked, had asked them, I don't know, in 2000s, why did they do this? Why did they vote for Putin and so on? They told that they want stability. They want the economic growth, and Putin and United Russia is just maintaining all this process, or secure this process. So it's okay. It's okay. It was nothing to discuss this time.
Right.
But now it was absolutely opposite. They told me that some of them told me that they voted for communists. Communist Party during the Duma elections, and they voted against Putin or for Zyuganov or some of them they support Prokhorov during the presidential elections. So it's very interesting. And then I asked some of them, why did they vote for communists? Because they are
entrepreneurs
and so on. It's stupid. Sorry, but it's stupid.
Right.
Or a little bit milder, it's exotic. Yeah.
Right.
And they told that they didn't vote for communists. They just voted against United Russia and Putin. So
but why not Yabloko? Why not? There are other items on the menu. So
because
to speak.
These people whom I spoke with, or they are not liberals.
Mm-hmm.
They are not. They are kind of ordinary, low part of middle class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Usually in Russian province, they have a very strong nationalistic feelings, and they are not liberals, and they are not communists.
Mm-hmm.
They are just following the events, and they don't have a strong political views, opinions, mm-hmm. and so on. So this was the first very interesting point which we discussed before. Part of this very serious political, I'm not agree with Kudrin, by the way.
That it's 50%?
About Russia now is in a very serious political crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It's something what we compare to political mm-hmm. crisis or situation that usually is called political crisis, but it's not a serious political crisis. But we'll
right,
back
we can,
to this.
Yeah.
The situation is very serious, and part of this problem is the kind of psychological irritation of a large part of Russian population against Putin himself.
Personally, aesthetically, almost.
Aesthetic. Maybe from the point of view of Moscow intelligentsia, sure, aesthetically, because it's absolutely other military or criminal aesthetics that irritate everyone.
Right. This macho image,
and so on. But it's not true for those whom I speak with.
So how are they irritated?
They irritated that this guy for 12 years always on TV screens and so on, and now, like, life is going worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm. So it was fine when life was getting better,
yes,
but now life's getting worse.
Yes, this is an obvious thing that when everything is okay in the country and in economics and so on. So everything that is good is connected to the sole ruler.
Right.
But when the situation turned bad, everyone is connected to all these problems with the same person.
Now, and neither of us are economists, but I don't think it takes an economist to figure out that the economy is going to get worse. I mean, the price of oil is falling. I saw today the price of Urals crude fell below $100
$100
a barrel, it's very serious. The ruble is at a 3-year low. We talked off mic a little bit about how some people you know in Nizhny Novgorod aren't doing so well economically. Can you talk a little bit about how people are doing economically? Are they able to make ends meet?
Some of them they are running kind of small business. They sell this car parts details of mm-hmm. the cars and so on, because you know Nizhny Novgorod, former Gorky,
right.
He produced some a lot
auto
of
producing, yeah,
yes, and so on. Situation on Gorky, so-called Gorky automobile plant, is very bad, really mm-hmm. very bad. But the situation in the district, in the part of the city which is an automobile plant district,
mm-hmm.
you know, and connected very close to the plant, to this factory, and to the production of mm-hmm. the cars, and so the situation is not extremely bad, but bad.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time.
This was even before the oil price dropped.
Yes, it was so. But But there were a kind of a renaissance, or maybe not renaissance, but just growth of a small and middle businesses in this district. Mm-hmm. Instead, not because of the situation on this automobile plant, but instead of making cars and so mm-hmm. on, it was kind of, the parallel economics in this part of Nizhny Novgorod. And now it's not over, but it's stagnated. It's stagnating. It's mm-hmm. stagnating now. And those people who connect themselves to this part mm-hmm. of the economic life of this district, they are very disappointed. And they connect, in its turn, they connect this situation to Putin. Mm-hmm. This is the result. If you want to be the authoritarian ruler,
you're responsible for everything.
Yes, you are responsible for everything in this country. And in totalitarian country, of course, you are responsible for everything, but you have a very effective tools to do something,
right.
But not in authoritarian state, because you can just control the political sphere, maybe sometimes yeah. the ideological sphere, but not all life.
Well, yeah. Of course not. I mean, Putin has control of a lot of things, but he does not have control of the price of oil.
Yes.
And as China's economy slows, as India's economy slows, the price of oil is going to go down. This is set by the world market, and Putin doesn't have any control over that. He also doesn't have any control over the price of capital, which is going to get increasingly expensive because the contagion from the euro crisis
yeah.
is going to raise the cost of capital.
This is the result of euro crisis.
This is the result yeah. of euro crisis. Putin has no control over this. He cannot say Russia's an island of stability anymore
yeah.
that he's going to be the great protector of. This thing's going to hit Russia, and it's going to get worse. And do you see what we're seeing in Moscow maybe spreading to places like Nizhny Novgorod?
I think the situation in Nizhny Novgorod and other regional centers, so-called regional centers, and Moscow are different, because Moscow now is not in a bad economic state.
No, not yet.
It's developing very, very, very fast, and life there and business there is just rushing, and it's full of life and so on, and that's why I'm a little bit happy to return to Sleepy Prague,
right.
because it's too nervous to be a lot of time in Moscow, yeah? More than 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know. It's an assault on the senses is what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And in this comparison, Nizhny Novgorod and the other regional centers, because, I visit some Siberian cities like Krasnoyarsk mm-hmm. and so on. It was
you go to Siberia autumn. Once a year.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's my ritual. Yeah, Siberian ritual. Yeah. Life there is different than in Moscow. Not bad, not better, not worse, but different.
Slower.
It's slower. It's more maybe established. And the most interesting for us in this context thing is that all these political terms we use trying to describe the situation in Russia, we can apply them even just to Moscow situation, but not to provincial situation.
Right.
That's why we cannot speak about, provincial liberals in Russia
right.
or provincial communists in Russia and so on. We can speak just about the party of United Russia, political party, so it's kind of part of government, mm-hmm. or Putin's party, and so on, with its own interests in every
region.
Yes, random region. And those who are or who oppose them from various points, but sometimes they prefer to unite their forces because they try to do something with this United Party, United Russia Party. It's not dictatorship, but rule.
But they need it to get anything
yes.
done to
yes,
get your business
it's,
registered.
Yes, but we can't imagine this in Moscow.
Right.
We can't imagine just only on these huge demonstrations, as it was in February and May, right. we can see communists with the liberals or, with everyone. But on the higher political level, yes, on the level of the political parties and groups and movements and the leaders of them, they never agree to be together against the, right. Kremlin and so on. But this happens in regional Russia, for instance. It's just
you see this beginning. This, well, we've seen this happen in regional Russia in local elections, for example.
Yes, local elections, and then communists can support Yabloko, Yabloko can support communists, and so on, communists, and so on. So this is just one, not very serious, but one just one example of how usual political terms we apply for the situation in Moscow, they don't work in the regional centers.
But if we see the economy continue to slide, could you see now the authorities have lost Moscow? I mean, they have lost Moscow decisively. They've lost the capital. They are losing, I would say, the provincial centers. Right, like they haven't lost them yet, but they are
beginning to.
I mean, when do you see us hitting a tipping point at some point where the kind of discontent we see in Moscow, we will see elsewhere?
In the beginning of our discussion, I told you, and you know, that I'm not a specialist in sociology.
Right.
But the main point here is how do we describe so-called middle class in Russia?
Mm-hmm.
If we think that middle class in Russia, they're it's a businessman plus intelligentsia and so on, I think we will be wrong, because bureaucracy... Russian bureaucracy is a part
of the middle class.
I think the most powerful part of Russian middle class.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are speaking about the feelings of Russian middle class, we have to speak not just about creative class in Moscow and some big cities, not just about middle class or small entrepreneurs and so on themselves, and not just about Russian intelligentsia and intellectuals, but we have to speak about this Russian bureaucracy.
Chinovniki.
as a most powerful part of Russian middle class.
And they've historically been very politically loyal.
Not all the time. In 19th century, it was not so. At some points, for instance, when Nicholas I, Russian Tsar, when he proposed the liberation or the project of liberation of serfs, part of Russian bureaucracy was strongly opposed this idea. And they toppled the idea at last, because you know, this liberation of serfs, it happened after the
Nicholas II.
Yes. And I can remember in other points in which historical points in which part of Russian bureaucracy or the highest part of Russian elite, or maybe sometimes a low, a middle part of Russian bureaucracy, as it was during the reign of Alexander I, and they stopped liberal reforms by Alexander I. So historically, it's not true.
And during the Gorbachev period, much of the bureaucracy.
Yes.
But
just
in each of the cases you've cited, you had the case of a reforming czar or general secretary, or who was attempting to reform, being thwarted by a conservative bureaucracy. But what we're seeing now, if I understand where you're going with the discussion, is we have a conservative czar, so to speak, and a parts of the bureaucracy that want reform.
I absolutely agree. But what is, I just can suppose, what is the source of, I think, the irritation of the part of Russian bureaucracy against Putin and his circle? The reason is that they are well off. They want to enjoy their position and so on. But they are very nervous because they are just... they are hooked by siloviki. You know, just imagine a typical, you know, provincial governor. He's absolutely okay. He's a boss of a big region. His sons and daughters are in the proper place, and they graduate from some British school or university. Everything is perfect. But everyone knows that Putin can just sack him in 5 minutes. And then that the Kremlin can, and we know some examples of this, can initiate some criminal process against them. Of course, they are very nervous in right. this situation.
The governors, yeah, but let's go down the bureaucracy into the areas we consider to be the middle class, because governors are
okay,
certainly not middle
the
class.
The same we can say about others. You know, about every small, modest chinovnik in Arzamas or right. in Nizhny Tagil. Everything, all this power vertical, if we remember the name of your blog and podcast, every detail of this power vertical is very nervous about their future in this situation.
You would think then they would want stability and they wouldn't want change.
It depends. It depends on the economic situation. It depends of the quantity and quality of the political mistakes that Putin and his aides are doing just now.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed 2 weeks ago a lot of mistakes made
right.
by Putin from the September 2011 to
right.
May 2012.
Yes.
And thirdly, it depends of if Russian opposition can propose something not interesting for this nervous bureaucracy, but something stable and steady, you know, instead of Putin's regime.
And what would, I mean, would that would be lessening the controls the Siloviki have over them? Would it be a return to economic growth that we saw in the last decade, which isn't going to happen right now? What do they want?
Every part of Russian population, and this is a very serious political problem, every part or every group of Russian population, they want various things. Random things, and maybe sometimes the opposite things. For instance, Russian intelligentsia, part of it, we can discuss what is it, Russian intelligentsia mm-hmm. today. Creative class, some liberals, I think some part of middle class, they need and they want liberal reforms.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not true about those bureaucrats who are opposing not so wide, but opposing Putin on the various levels of power.
Vertical. Some of them want liberal reforms, but not all of them.
I don't know. I am not specialist, but I can just imagine about the state of mind about what's going on now in the country. Don't forget about Russian farmers or peasantry and so on. They have their own interests in mm-hmm. the future of the country. And don't forget about military, not about the secret services and mm-hmm. so on, but about military. Yes, and so on. They are losers. They were and still are losers in all political reforms after the fall of USSR.
Right.
So, but it's more than 1 million people
yeah.
not
yeah.
just the army, but all these people who are connected to army and to various sides of this activity and so on. So, situation is very complex. Is very complex, and we can't speak that one part of Russian population is for Putin, supporting Putin, and other is against him. Everyone has its own aim,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the science of politics, for instance, for Russian opposition is somehow to. You know, to collect
this all together.
Yes, all together, and to try to define the mutual interest of the very important part, not of all, but very important part of Russian population.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a few moments, we'll continue our discussion about what effect an economic downturn would have on the protests now sweeping Russia and how the authorities may react to these to this. I'd like to remind you that you're listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. I would also like to remind you, you can read the Power Vertical blog at RFERL.org. You can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical.
Потому Путин хочет запретить We don't need those who suppress freedom and truth. We need a truthful and free country. I'm sick and tired of living in this disgusting country.
Those were protesters at a May 31st demonstration in Moscow, which was broken up by the police. One of the conclusions of the Center for Strategic Research report was that an economic downturn could lead to an increase in street protests, which in turn could embolden hardliners in the Kremlin and lead the authorities to take even tougher measures. The latter part of this already seems to be happening. The Duma next week will vote on a law that would impose prohibitively high penalties and fines for unsanctioned street protests. The authorities, meanwhile, seem to be taking off the gloves in their crackdown on dissent. For example, a Russian court this week jailed an opposition activist for 15 days for spitting on a portrait of President Vladimir Putin. Kirill, where do you see this going? Both sides seem to be reaching a very uncompromising position, given now all the other factors we discussed in the first part of the podcast, the economic downturn, the fall in the price of oil, what potentially could be declining living standards. And within this, you got these two sides that neither of which looks like they're in the mood to compromise.
Let's begin with the authorities. I'm sure, and I saw it when I was in Russia, that they're very uneasy and very anxious. Just one observation, quick observation. I visited some of the mass protests in Moscow 10 days ago, yeah. One of them was so-called the stroll of the artists, mm-hmm. You know. And it was a very peaceful demonstration, and it was stroll. Mm-hmm.
The weather, artists are peaceful people by nature.
So. Sometimes, you know, don't forget about art group Vojna.
Well, okay.
Don't forget about...
They're peaceful, but they're just...
Okay, Banks, yeah. So we can discuss afterwards. Yes, Van Gogh was not such a peaceful person, yeah. It was very peaceful. The weather was fine. Mm-hmm. It happened on Moscow Boulevard, so everything was perfect, absolutely perfect. Mm-hmm. A lot of people... And I tried to look thoroughly at the policemen.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of policemen now in Moscow on the every corner, wherever on the boulevards they collect so-called avtozaki, you know, mm-hmm. these cars especially for detained persons and so on. So my interest was not with the opposition artists and those who participated, mm-hmm. but I watched on the police. And it was a great difference between the behavior and even the eyes of policemen. When I was in February and attended this huge demonstration in February, uh-huh. and now. In February, the authorities told the policemen to be very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried. Mm-hmm. They tried to be nice. But this nicety was till some point.
Mm-hmm.
After that, it was, you know, every policeman
has his limits.
Yes, has his limits and so on. And they were very confident. They were confident in themselves. Now they were very anxious. And I can understand why.
Mm.
Because everything that they do will turn against them. If they will be or would be very brute and so on to attack the protesters and so on, everyone will accuse them in brutality and that they were just not people but animals. Mm-hmm. Or you know, if they would be mild, they can't follow the rules of the policemen and so on. And they understand that the protesters, they are not openly, but hiddenly aggressive against them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very anxious, the policemen. And in this situation, no one knows what to expect from them. The situation is very nervous every time you meet the policemen on these rallies or demonstrations, mm-hmm. and so on. I told you this story because I want to compare this behavior and state of mind of the policemen with the Russian authorities.
Mm-hmm.
They are very anxious and very uneasy, and we don't know what to expect from them. Mm-hmm. That's why they are making one mistake, then political to another, and so on. This is about the authorities. They are very nervous.
They seem to have made their choice, though. They seem to be cracking down. I mean, a 17-year-old girl was charged with 18-year-old girl in Moscow. Over the protests on May 6th in Moscow. You had this case in southern Russia of this boy that was a 20-year-old man who was given 15-day sentence for spitting on a portrait of Putin.
He didn't spit, by the way.
And he didn't spit. He says he sneezed. Yeah. We could be getting into a situation like Belarus, and I don't mean that Putin's going to turn into Lukashenko, but that you hear almost daily in Belarus of somebody arrested for cursing in public, allegedly, or something like that. The authorities seem to have made their choice, or do you think it's not that simple?
In this context, I'd prefer not to generalize the situation. Yes, all these facts that you told, they're right. Yes, and the situation with this girl who is accused of something.
Throwing bricks at the police.
Yes, attacking 20 policemen.
I took a look at this girl, and she's a pretty petite, young girl.
That's something from, I think, like the girl from Tarantino movie, yeah?
Right.
Speaking seriously, there are some facts, yes, and we can interpret them as if the authorities already decided what to do. But on the other hand, there a huge uncertainty in this behavior, in these movements. For instance, there is no any clear official attitude to what is happening now in Russia. Mm-hmm. No one, president, prime minister, whoever, no one did or is now defining the situation in any words.
Mm-hmm.
They can't explain the situation, and they can't explain themselves. This is not the situation like in Belarus, when Lukashenko all the time can explain what he is for and what he is against, and so on. This is kind of uncertainty, and in this situation, everything, as I told you, everything could happen.
Mm-hmm.
They can take a kind of mild position, and they can be very brutal and so on. So anyway, as speaking about the position, they are at the same, I think, low point.
Mm-hmm.
They're not sure what they are for now, today.
Is it because the elite's divided, or is it because Putin doesn't know what to do yet?
First of all, they're against Putin himself, as we told. Mm-hmm. You can gather 10 or 15 or 1,000 people in Moscow once or twice on the platform that all of them they are against or irritated by Putin.
Mm-hmm.
But what else? What further? They can't propose any clear political program to the society. And it's not because they can't agree about, privatization or financial policy and so on. No, it's not about all these things. They can't even imagine the situation when Putin or someone in Kremlin will share the power with them.
Right.
They are just about protesting, opposing, and whatever. But they are not for what to do if they come to the power.
Yeah, no, this is the classic problem of the Russian opposition, one of the classic problems.
Lenin knew everything about what to do when he did this October Revolution. This is the great difference between Russian Bolsheviks or Russian revolutionaries in 1905 or 1917 and today.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think
Udaltsov knows what he wants to do.
No.
No?
No. He just wants to be opposed. He wants to be a hero and so on. But if we read the political program of this political group, yes, Avangard Krasnoye Molodezhi, the avant-garde of Red Youth. Yes.
Yeah.
What is the content of this? It's a kind of Stalinist bullshit. That's all. It's not for the society. No, it's not even for those who are supporting communists. Now, for instance, these people whom I was speaking with in Nizhny Novgorod, it's not about them. It's about no one. And it's a very similar situation as it was during Perestroika, because everyone was against communist party, communist ideology, and so on. But what was not the negative but positive program?
Well, Yeltsin seemed to provide that at least briefly in the
Yeltsin's circle. Tried to provide, and I think succeeded in this.
Succeeded in the overthrow.
But we don't have Yeltsin now, and we don't have Chubais, Gaidar, and all these young people around Yeltsin in the end of 80s and the beginning of 90s. So they are not thinking about the future.
Kudrin is, and now I would not put him in the opposition. He's by any stretch of the imagination, but Kudrin is an alternative. That's the it's the one a lot of people would, you know, a lot of people in the West would like to see.
Such people are not terribly popular, you know, among the population. For sure, he's a moderate liberal. I can agree. But he is responsible for the financial policy during the Putin's era. Yeah. But not everyone in Russia is agree that it was such a success.
Right.
You know, he's a very good guy, and he's clever, he's witty, he's very moderate, you know. He's supported by, I think, those parts of liberal circles or liberal elite in Moscow, in St. Petersburg. By the way, you know, he's a head of so-called Smolny College in St. Petersburg. It's not just a coincidence. It's I think
no,
it's
he
a program.
Was part of the regime. He was part of the regime.
So Kudrin's conclusions or Kudrin's Institute conclusions about political crisis, they are alarming.
They're very alarming. And they look very plausible to me. I mean, if the economy continues to decline, if we don't only have the creative class protesting, but if we also have industrial and rural unrest. Remember the fears of the unrest in mono cities that was talked about in the Russian media about 2 years ago. If that becomes a reality in this situation where you have a very uncertain, nervous elite that really doesn't know what to do, that is a combustible mix. And I guess before we finish up today, I want to ask a simple question. Is Russia on the verge of a full-blown crisis?
Sorry, I am a pedant.
I know. I led you with that question because I know what you want to say.
Yes, but we have to define what does it mean. Political crisis, yeah, serious political crisis, as Kudrin's people put it. We just remembered Lenin and I want to recall his definition of the political crisis, revolutionary ситуация, revolutionary situation. It's a time when верхи не могут, а низы не хотят.
Those on the top can't, those on the bottom won't.
Don't want. So it's not such a situation now in Russia, because we don't have such a division between those who are inferior and those who are just lower classes and so on. But as we told in one of our previous podcasts, that I think that the main social, economic, and political problem in contemporary Russia is the problem of social injustice. And that is the source of every future riots, I don't know, revolutions, uprisings, or if they can happen. Sure, I hope that they will not happen, but if they will happen, the social injustice. And in this case, it's very interesting. Those who are opposing in Moscow Putin's regime on Bolotnaya Square will be on his side of the barricade.
Right. Will be on...
Because they are well off. They're rich. Right. They are haves. It will be have-nots against haves. And they will be at the same at the same part, the same side of the barricade of the
haves
front
and the have
line,
nots yes, will be on the same yes, side yes, of the barricade.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, but the problem is, and I wrote about this a bit on the blog this week, is that if this worst case scenario that Kudrin and his people painted last week comes to pass, the results could be very, very nasty because there are more nationalists and extreme leftists in this group that is opposing Putin now than there are pro-Western liberals. Could we be someday pining for the days of the liberal Putin? I mean, if you think about this, I mean, could the situation get... Could we get something worse?
I think so. And one of the reasons of this situation is that Putin crossed this borderline in the beginning of May.
Yeah, yeah.
After the 6th of May, and especially after the 7th of May, of the inauguration in the empty Moscow as a symbolic act of the attitude of the authority towards the society... any serious figure from opposition movement will come to terms with him himself personally. Maybe with some other people from his circle or from his aides or some people from Kremlin. Maybe even with Medvedev, but not with Putin.
You think there's still a chance?
Now he's in some meaning of this term. He's a person non grata in Russian politics.
Yeah.
And this is very serious. We began from the personal irritation against Putin from the various sides of Russian society, and we are closing our podcast with the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it would be ironic if Medvedev was the one that who looks just like a diminished figure now. Could emerge, because if he is the one in the elite that at the end of the day that people can talk to if the
but don't forget about numerous French presidents in the beginning of 20th century, absolutely obscure figures. They just grow to the to fame for 1 or 2 years and then fell against there, and then grow in 10 years then
again,
and so on. So everything could happen.
Well, unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. Kirill, welcome back. I'm glad to have you back. I'd like to remind everybody you've been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me has been my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service, fresh back from a trip from Moscow and Nizhny Novgorod. I'd like to also remind you that you can listen to you can read the Power Vertical blog at RFERL. You can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical. Join us again next week, and as always, I now leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noise MC.